Thank you for tuning in to the West Side this Monday morning on Ideas 88.3 and 88.7. I'm Rich Kramer. We have a full house for this hour's discussion, where we talk about women's role in government and the efforts that are ongoing to get more women into representative government at local, state, and national level. If you've got a question or a comment on this subject, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. That number again is 1-800-228-5615. So now let's introduce our guests, and in no particular order. I've got two of them in the studio and two by phone. First, let's introduce Emily Berge. She represents Eau Claire's North Side as the city councilwoman for District 1. This past April, she defeated incumbent Tim Tewalt and began her three-year term. She is new to elected office, and we're going to talk to her all about it. Emily Berge, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you. Also joining us in studio is Jody Emerson. She was elected to the 91st State Assembly District. That's most of the city of Eau Claire. She is the first female representative of the 91st Assembly District and heads to Madison to begin her two-year term in January 2019. This is her first time holding state political office.
Any political office.
I thought for some reason you were on the city council as well. My mistake. So we've got two newcomers at two different levels in the studio with us. Jody Emerson, welcome back to the West Side.
Thanks for having me, Rich.
Good to have you. Joining us by phone, we have two women on the other side of the fence. They are involved in recruiting and helping women run for office. First, I'd like to introduce Robin Moore. Robin Moore is with us by phone. She is the 2018-2019 president of the Wisconsin Federation of Republican Women. The WFRW has clubs in Eau Claire and Chippewa counties and around the state. It's part of a national federation of Republican women and shares the mission of, quote, advancing the power of women through political access and participation. Robin Moore, we're glad to have you. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Rich. Glad to be here.
Good to have you. And joining us also by phone is Erin Forrest. She is the executive director of Emerge Wisconsin, an organization that scouts and supports Democratic women candidates. She formerly served on the Waterloo City Council and Planning Commission there, and with the Democratic Party. Erin Forrest, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you so much for having me, Rich.
Good to have you. We've got a hard-hitting panel here, and again, listeners, if you have questions or comments, do give us a call. The number is 1-800-228-5615. That number again, 1-800-228-5615, and we've got wide-open phone lines. So to start, I'm going to kind of go round-robin here. And I'd like to give each of you a little bit of time to tell us about your personal path into politics. So why don't I start with you, Jody Emerson. When did you first take an interest in this field?
Well, I've always been interested in following politics. My husband's involved in journalism locally. And so, you know, politics and journalism cross over quite a bit. And so we analyze and overanalyze and triple analyze everything that's going on at the local level and some of the state and federal things as well. And, you know, West Wing's my favorite show. So I've been a political junkie for a really, really long time, but never thought I would get involved in running for office. And as a matter of fact, when a friend of mine approached me for doing it, year and a half ago or so. I mean, I just laughed out loud. I was like, are you kidding? And this was a friend of mine who is another representative down in Madison. And I was director of public policy and community relations for a small nonprofit. And so I was working on legislation. And it's a easy switch from being public policy into actually helping to write the laws. But I mean, I never even thought about it until a friend of mine said, no, Dana's not running for the 91st, you need to step up and do this. And I think that's one thing that seems to be an overriding theme is that women really need to be asked and encouraged in order to run, no matter which party it is or what level it is. You know, I think a lot of times guys jump in. You know, they're the cannonballers off the dock that they'll jump in and they'll do it. And women more often than not are the toe dippers. Am I sure I can? Oh, I don't know. The water's a little bit cold. I'm not sure if I want to do this. And tend to need a little bit more encouragement, which is why I'm glad that there's people like Robin and Erin being involved in what they're doing. Because as women, we do need encouragement to do this.
So for the listeners, the 91st, the Dana that that Jody Emerson is referring to is Dana Walks. He's the current, until the end of the year, state representative for the 91st Assembly District. I think he was elected in 2014?
To 2012, I believe.
2012.
So he's the only one that's held it on the current lines.
Right.
So.
All right. Well, I want to get back to you in a little bit about that whole idea of it being preposterous to run. You know, why? That's fascinating to me. So let me go to Emily Berge. So, you know, what did someone come to you and say, hey, you should do this? Or did you decide, you know what, I'm going to do this? You know, what's your personal story?
Well, my personal story, I guess, is at the end of 2016, I just kind of woke up. I thought I was kind of asleep at the wheel and started really paying attention to some things, which got me involved with different groups. And in that course of paying attention and with my eyes wide open, I started seeing things that I felt frustrated by. I felt like there was a disconnect between elected officials and the people that elected them. I felt like my voice as a woman was not being heard. I thought lots of voices were not being heard at the table. So, so it was all kind of, it wasn't just one thing, I guess. It was just this culmination, this domino effect where I met different people. I started getting more involved. And then a conversation did start, and they brought up, have you ever thought about running for office? And I'm like, well, kind of, but I never knew how to get from A to B, though, too. Like, you think, oh, yeah, that would be really cool to have that, you know, to be involved in that way. But how do you do that? And then people told me, we'll help you, you know, we won't leave you hanging. And different people did reach out to me, got me connected to different groups. And that was really, really helpful, just how to do it. I just kind of, the quote when I was deciding if I wanted to run or not, the quote that, you know, came to mind was, you know, if you don't have a seat at the table, then you're probably on the menu. And that really, I'm like, okay, like that, I just need to have a seat at the table. And what I believe, just one more thing, is even though I think now I have that seat at the table, but I'm all about inviting other people to the table and leaving room for people to join, including, you know, we need men, but we need a lot of women too at the table. So I'm really lifting people up, especially women, to come join me. So
thank you both for that. And also congratulations on your wins. So let's go to our other guests on the phone. Robin Moore, I want to go to you first. You took a run for a statewide political office. You didn't win that race, but what kind of pushed you to get into that? See, I don't know enough about you, whether or not you've been on local government, city council or county board or something like that. So, you know, what kind of moved you to do it?
Sure. Well, I agree with Jody and Emily both in what they were saying, that we find that women do need to be asked. And sometimes that ask comes, you know, in gentle pushes or a nice boot to really get you motivated to jump into the fray. But it is the ask, and it is finding that purpose. I think that when women take a look at what they're able to do and what they can contribute, sometimes we don't have the confidence in ourselves that we're the ones that can take that seat at the table. And in fact, that was an effort by our national federation. We have a motivational message or a theme, and we have a seat for you at our table, because we want all kinds and all thoughts and all backgrounds coming together to solve problems. And I think when women do get into politics, that we have a unique way of approaching situations. I think we have a great deal to offer when it comes to problem solving. And what it came down to for my decision to join was getting those gentle and not so gentle pushes to be asked to run. But when I took a look at what was needing to be done, I really felt that I could contribute and had the people backing me, helping to provide that confidence to say, yeah, well, your voice needs to be there. So I agree with the other two panelists that's really what I think what it takes for women. And so sometimes organizations like our federation and others out there, it is letting women know that there is somebody that can help them, that'll give them the tools to run. There's a lot of ways that gets done, but it's usually done locally. You know, an old adage is, you know, all politics is local, and I think we find that when it comes to women in running, knowing that they've got support of people around them locally is really what helps motivate them and gets them to say yes to go get those signatures and get their name on the ballot.
Thank you for that, Robin Moore. Now, Aaron Forrest, your group specifically, from what I know about it, it actually trains women to run. So you might be one of these nudgers. You know, why do you think, because just the paperwork that I have to sift through to find out the financials for candidates, that starts to make my head spin. And I don't even know about what else has to be filed. So that by itself seems daunting. But I'm going to ask you why we've heard it over and over again already that people kind of needed a nudge, or, you know, someone came to them and asked them to run. Why do you think that's necessary? Why isn't that feeling just there from the get-go, do you think?
That is a long, a very long answer, but I'll try to hit some of the highlights for
and
you.
And we'll touch on it again, for sure.
Yeah, so, I mean, it really does come down in part to how we're socialized as girls and as women. And it's certainly not that women don't want to change the world, right? We're just much more likely initially to try to do that through either going into education or going into nonprofits. There's a political ambition gap between men and women that starts in high school and never goes away. And then when you combine that with the confidence gap that some of the other panelists have touched on, which is not limited to politics, if there's a job description that requires that has 10 requirements, men will apply when they meet 6. Women won't apply until we meet all 10. And it really does have a lot to do with social pressure and the different expectations we have for women than for men. We have higher expectations for women still, right? This gender equality is not something that was solved in the 70s, and there's still a lot of lingering underlying issues that feed into all of this. And then you get into things like the power of incumbency and the different hurdles that there are for women to run. And frankly, that we're in a time when there's not a great perception of politics. You really have to be motivated to want to get in and make some change.
That makes sense. 1-800-228-5615 is the number to call in if you've got a question or a comment. We're talking about women in government and the historic gains this year in terms of national. Also, I saw a lot of women candidates running for offices. Not a lot of them took the offices, and that's a whole other discussion about political maps and whatnot. But the incumbents did very well in western, west central Wisconsin in general. But a lot of new faces, a lot of young faces, and that was very interesting to see. And it seemed to be part of a national trend. So that's what we're talking about this hour. We have wide open phone lines, so give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. Would you ever think about running for politics, whether you're a man or a woman? You know, I'm kind of curious just to find out what that spark is that people might have, but might not feel like they've got the confidence to really let it flame up. So 1-800-228-5615. So I'm going to go round robin one more time, and I want to talk about role models. And I'm wondering if any of you have specific role models in your life or from history who inspired you kind of to take this leap, because it is quite a leap, even for local government. I mean, you really have to put yourself out there. So, Robin Moore, I'll start with you.
Thanks, Rich. Well, that's an interesting question, because I think if I mention the names, you all would not have heard of them. I live on the eastern side of the state a little bit more.
Understood.
But I've watched our local women. that are so bold and so brave when going up against usually what is an organization of mostly men, whether it's on our county boards and city councils, and just putting themselves out there. And, you know, it was one of the thoughts that went through my head in running was, you know, by gosh, if they can do it, I can too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the heroes, I think, that motivated me, and as far as role models, are really very local. And then I've gotten to see some of our Republican women at the state and national level, you know, see what they've gone through, what they've been able to accomplish, and what they put themselves out there to do. But I guess if I have to pick one person in that, I think women can look up to, and I just love reading about her life. And I've not had the opportunity to meet her, but Condoleezza Rice
mm-hmm.
is someone that I just greatly admire and respect. And, you know, I've learned and I would say probably revere, because I respect a lot of people, but when it comes down to somebody that I really have taken an interest in is Condoleezza Rice and her past. And although not having been gone through the election process per se, what I think she did and how she handles herself politically is, I think, just an amazing story, and a woman that everybody can look to and really take something away and learn from.
And I've heard a phenomenal concert pianist as well, or a classical
exactly.
pianist.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. So, Aaron Forrest, you know, do you have any specifics that have kind of motivated you to get into your line of work, or to push more women into local and state government, national government?
I have a lot, and interestingly, this is one of the other factors that leads to having fewer women in elected office leads to having fewer women in elected office, because it's harder to be what you can't see. But someone who was incredibly helpful in mentoring me and pushing me and lifting up women was Peg Lautenschlager.
Mm.
She was just tireless in elevating other women when she was in office and after she left, right up until the very end of her life. She mentored so many women in Wisconsin politics, and there are so many of us who would not be doing what we're doing today were it not directly for her help and support and leadership.
Thank you for that. A big name, whether it, even though it's not might not be on the tip of a lot of people's tongues statewide, big name in Wisconsin politics. Emily Berge, you know, your turn.
Oh, thanks.
Anyone in particular or
yes,
not?
Since, you know, I guess I'm relatively new to the political world. You know, I've started paying attention a couple years ago and slowly got more involved, and now I'm, you know, elected office. But so I guess a lot of political names don't come to mind, and
doesn't have to be.
Yeah, and that's what I thought I come from a family of really strong women. I feel like, you know, my mom, and she has four sisters, and I just feel like she instilled that value of, you know, you work hard and you show up and you help people and you get things done. And again, but also that compassionate too, and I feel like, you know, just watching that, and my mom actually happens to be a clerk for her township. She, like, just the last 2 years, I think she was appointed and she ran this past spring in Orinoco, Minnesota. And my aunt is a county supervisor in Stearns County, Minnesota.
Hmm.
So, and that's a kind of a recent thing too. So where those aren't directly, I don't know, that didn't directly impact my decision, but I still think that's pretty cool that, you know, they also felt like you got to show up and help people. And even though role model may not be the right word for the next thing, but I guess I'm really impressed by the women that decided to run, whether they won their election or not, just watching that again, just paying more attention and watching the latest election. yeah, just impressed by these women that put everything out there and they worked hard. And I just think that's really cool.
Jody Emerson.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess looking at role models, I've got anything from, you know, first ladies, whether it was Hillary and Michelle or Laura and Barbara Bush, you know, being able to take an issue and still be standing in your husband's shadow in their cases and still make your own shadow is something that's really impressive. Or, you know, Senator Klobuchar over in Minnesota has really tackled a lot of human trafficking issues. And so she was a definite role model for me because she tackled an issue that people weren't talking about like I did and, you know, wasn't doing it for the lobbying dollars, wasn't doing it for the attention. She was doing it for the right thing. And I would also have to say that in this last year, there's a lot of local women like Emily and other women who ran for local office who I saw out knocking on doors in January and February and March. Sarah Harless, Emily Anderson, Emily Berge, Jill Christofferson. You know, there's a whole slew of women, Lydia Borboom, all these women who are running for office either in Eau Claire City or county and just working so darn hard to tackle their world. And it's so impressive that, you know, we can't stand on the sidelines anymore. But, you know, every woman has a different story. Every different woman has a different motivation. And I'm sure we'll get into that as the hour goes on, too.
We definitely will. 1-800-228-5615. I want to throw the number out again. We're talking about women in politics. It's time for our first break. This hour, we're going to discuss women's role in government. And, you know, we're hearing that this is the second year of the woman, as it 1992 was being the first. So what does that phrase mean to you? We'll get into that a little bit and take your calls, hopefully, when we come back. 1-800-228-5615. I'm Rich Kramer. This is the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio, Ideas 88.3 and 88.7.
Support for WPR comes from the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin Foster Care Program, dedicated to helping thousands of Wisconsin foster kids connect with caring families. More about being a foster parent is at chw.org/TFC. Support also comes from the Water Street Historic District, an eclectic mix of locally owned shops, salons, and restaurants, offering shoppers boutique gifts, dining, and more in the heart of Eau Claire. Make memories on Water Street.
You're listening to the West Side on Wisconsin Public Radio. Four guests are joining me this hour to help us understand women's roles in government. Eau Claire City Councilwoman Emily Berge is here, and Wisconsin State Assemblywoman-elect Jody Emerson is here with us as well in the studio. By phone, we are joined by Aaron Forrest of Emerge Wisconsin and Robin Moore of the Wisconsin Federation of Republican Women. Those are two organizations that are actively recruiting and encouraging women to run for office. If you've got a question or comment, give us a call at 1-800-228-5615. We've already touched on a little bit about, you know, the idea that it's just not an automatic. It's not as much as a given for a woman because of all the societal pressures and everything else. You've all said that it's just not automatic. It takes some encouraging. It takes a lot of support. And I'm just wondering, I mean, we always hear about double standards. So when you do take that leap, and, you know, it was written about a lot during the 2016 presidential election that female candidates are up against a whole different set of challenges that their male counterparts might not be. And, you know, whenever someone says that, it draws immediate defensive reactions. I mean, people tend to hunker down when they hear something like that. So let me go to Jody Emerson to start this off. And if anyone else wants to jump in, feel free to do so. And also give us a call, 1-800-228-5615. So it's said quite often that female candidates have to deal with a lot more, that it's a lot, there's more challenges. So what are they and how does that feel from your perspective?
Yeah, well, I feel like we could spend an hour on just me answering this question alone. But, you know, I think it ties back into what Aaron was saying about, you know, if there's a 10-point checklist, women feel like we need all 10 points where men are going to go, you know, apply for that job if they've got 6 out of 10. And I think we especially if you're running for office, you need to have everything checked off that list, because I do feel like we're being held to a higher standard. If I would do an interview on TV, I would get emails, comments, Facebook posts, whatever, about what I was wearing. Do you think that the men who, especially in the primary that I went up against, do you think that they got talked about, oh, I don't know if you should have worn a polo, you should have worn a button-down shirt instead? And so we are picked apart, not only by men, but by women as well. And what does our hair look like? And you were wearing too much makeup, and that lipstick was too bright of a color. And so it's everything from a superficial piece to when I was knocking on doors, I would have some guys answer the door and say, oh, you probably want to be elected because you're a woman. No, I'm a qualified and competent woman, and that's why I think I'm the best person for this job. The fact that I'm a woman as well happens to have nothing to do with it. I'm the right person for the job, and obviously the voters reflected that as well. But, you know, there again, I don't think any of my male counterparts had anybody ever asked them, and I could be wrong, but I doubt anybody said, oh, I bet you want to run just because you're a guy. So I think we do add the gender card in there as well. On the flip side, when I was out knocking doors, I would have old ladies who'd lived in Eau Claire all their life answer the door and say, oh my gosh, you're Jody, and would start crying, because it would have been, when I was elected, would have been the first time that they would have been represented by a woman. Hmm. I had you know, parents who would say, wait, you need to meet my daughter. I need to introduce my daughters to you. And I'd have, you know, toddlers and young grade school kids who the parents wanted to make sure to introduce me. And so that's when I realized, when I was out knocking doors and I was getting those kind of comments, that's when I realized it was bigger than the piece that I was looking at, that there was this, you know, I'm the first woman to ever represent the south side of Eau Claire. Ever in the state assembly, the first woman to represent the city of Eau Claire as a whole. Kristen Dexter represented the north side a few years ago before mm-hmm. the lines were changed, but the south side has never had anybody represent us in the state assembly. And, you know, that was really something that a lot of women were feeling as I was going around and knocking on doors. So whether it's our opinions about things, whether it's the clothes we're wearing, how we've got our hair or makeup done, whatever. And it's women who are sometimes picking us apart. You know, I'd get out of a debate and I'd have another woman say, I really like your outfit. And I said, well, that's great. What did you think of my answers? Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's always, I think that how do we look and how do we feel are tied sometimes together as women. So,
Robin Moore, I'd like to go to you now. And in you ran in the 14th State Assembly District, correct?
Correct.
Did you experience mm-hmm. any of that when you were knocking doors? Did you feel any additional pressure that you don't think that you're the incumbent or the challenger that you're up against would have felt?
I think to some degree, and I think we've seen that in multiple races, different times. I agree wholeheartedly with Jody that's I think what we are just up against as women. But I think it's in part because we hold ourselves to a higher standard as well, and sometimes that is what keeps the playing field a little uneven. But you're right. Our male counterparts typically aren't usually commented on how they look, you know, just because of that reason. They're men, we're women. It's the Venus and Mars things. I don't know that we'll ever be able to solve that problem. And it does come down to then the opportunity to be given to really share your ideas and have people hear what you say. But women are looked at differently. I mean, we had a candidate this year who had some, a lot of misinformation being put out there by her opponent. And boy, it really got her upset. And, you know, when a man might get you know, pounding the podium, something like that, oh boy, he's strong and bold. And then when a woman does, it's like, oh, she's kind of mean.
Yes.
So we have to be aware of those things. But at the same time, if what we're asking for is equality, then it'd be nice, you know, if reflectively we were judged on those same things, that being bold enough to speak the truth and not, you know, not let an opportunity go by to tell your story and, you know, what this candidate had done and to, you know, achieve the goals and accomplishments that she had done, and to just be sidelined because, oh, her tone was mean compared to her opponents. Or again, if it was a male, I don't think those words would have ever been uttered.
The word tone, yeah, I think of the debates, the presidential debates. There was all kinds of discussion about tone, and it was specific to one candidate. Aaron Forrest, as you're training, you know, a new class of women that are about to graduate from your program, I mean, how do you prepare them to face this or to respond? Is there a way that you can use that at all?
So, yes and no. We do spend a fair amount of time going through the myths and the realities with women running for public office. The good news is that there is women who run for legislative office win at the same rates as men. We do still have to work harder for it. There's no doubt there are still some additional barriers there. But we're just as likely as men to win. And that is something that I think women don't necessarily know. There is, unfortunately, as we've seen, but there is still a bias, a voter bias against women in executive office, and we still have some work to do on that. But as far as legislative office, and that goes from, you know, town board to U.S. Senate, women are just as likely to win as men. So we spend a fair amount of time talking about pivoting back to what you actually want to talk about when you get questions that are inappropriate or irrelevant. Mm-hmm. And looking at ways to focus back on your issues in your campaign, and to try not to get distracted by that. But we also don't minimize it, because unfortunately, that sort of thing isn't something that magically goes away when the campaign is over. It's something that elected women have to deal with at a higher rate too. The point that I like to make to women who are in the program is that it's not like you get to magically avoid sexism if you don't run for public office. It's not like this is the only industry where women aren't treated equally, right? It's anywhere, any workplace in this country. Again, as we've seen, demonstrated quite clearly over the last few years, you can have to deal with this sort of sexism. But if you run for public office, you might have a chance to impact policy that makes a long-term difference and makes it better for you and for other women who come after you.
Thank you for that, Aaron Forrest. Emily Berge, I want to go to you now. And you know, we've talked a little bit about some of the stereotypes, you know, the ideas that we have, whether conscious or unconscious, about men and women. And I wanted to talk about the role, even describing women as, you know, well, they're good negotiators, or even things like that, whether it be true or not, is still a little stereotypical. So do you feel that, you know, some local quotes, for example, there was a assistant minority leader, Diane Hasselbein, who was quoted in a WPR news article saying that more women representatives will lead to more family-focused legislation and will keep gridlock at bay because they're so good at working together. Maybe true, but also could be considered a gender stereotype. Carrie Kincaid, at the end of her tenure at the city council, she said, "A lady always knows when it's time to leave." Little things like that, harmless, but also, do you see that kind of the stereotypes that on both sides, you know, I'm trying to get at? Emily Berge.
Yeah, I mean, I know what you mean. It's hard to overgeneralize, but I do think there are differences in male and female. In my day job, I'm actually a counselor, so I kind of work with I do a lot of couples work too. So this comes up there as well. And I think men and women do approach things differently, whether it be nature or nurture, you know, whether because of brain stuff or the way we were raised. Mm-hmm. That's another show as well.
It sure is.
But so there are differences, but I think, I think what you're alluding to is you don't want to assume things and don't want to paint, you know, all women do it this way and all men do it that way, because, yeah, there's danger in that, and that's not helpful. But I do think there are differences in the way that men relate to people and women relate to people and the way they get things done. I think to help that, you know, people have looked at statistics, and I've read that too, that women actually get, and I'm doing air quotes, get more done, you know, in like legislative office, and they've looked at the number of bills that women, like how many bills that women authored and co-authored went through, and how many, same with men.
Right.
And women have, and this was on the national level, and I think the stats were a couple years old, but women got more bills passed. And they were, I also saw a quote or a statistic say that women were able to bring more funds back home to their district. Mm-hmm. So if that, if you deem that as a successful, then you can say they're more successful that way. But so you can look at statistics, I guess, to back things up. But yeah, I think it's, I don't think we should paint all women do things this way and all men do things that way too, and then just stop it there. I think we also always need to have conversation and dialogue and to be talking about these things too.
Yeah, it is definitely, I mean, there's a line, you know, and there are differences, but then if you pile too much stuff on that line, it can kind of bend and sway. I thought I saw your hand go up. Were you going to add something, Jody?
I was just thinking too that like as far as like getting bills passed, you know, I mean, I've already got several different ideas, and I'm thinking, not what do I want my legislation to be written as? My first thought is, who can I get to collaborate with me on this?
Sure.
So whether it's you know, maybe a male on the Republican side, or what, you know, I think women are let's work together to get something accomplished. And again, this is such a general stereotype, and I'm almost smacking myself for saying this, but you know, where I think guys are a little bit more able to say, I've got a great idea, I'm going to get this passed, and so I'm going to run with this, and if anybody wants to hop on board, that's great, but it's my train and I'm taking it out. Where I think women are looking at it like, let's collaboratively approach this before we even really start going on this. And if I get this person in this party, in this chamber on board, then we can work together. And it's got a lot of momentum to start with, where a guy is going to tend to jump off right away. At least that's what I'm seeing in Madison anyways. Mm-hmm. And it's a stereotypical comment, but it also is based in observations that I've had down there. So
1-800-228-5615 is the number to call. If you've got questions or comments, we've got two open phone lines right now waiting for you. We're talking about women in government and the effort to get more women elected to local city council, county board, statewide legislative office, state executive office, and national, you know, you name it, that there's an effort to get women into that seat. 1-800-228-5615. And Jody Emerson, I'm going to follow up with you because you kind of mentioned something. I was wondering, there's more of a consensus that you've seen where there's some coalition building before you go forward on legislation. So I'm just wondering, do you think that any of that has anything to do with a sense of needing to prove, you know, that you feel that you've, because if you feel you're like you're going into something with these challenges that others might not face, does that bring up in a person a sense of, well, I'm going to show them? Or
I guess what I've been looking at it from ideas that are coming up already for me, it's more along the lines of, well, if I get a veteran, you know, Republican senator on board, they can't say, well, it's just this new girl wanting to make a name for herself. And so it's more about what's my strategy for getting this legislation through. I guess that's my mindset with it. But it's more about wanting to see the legislation passed all the way through and what's the best successful way of doing that. But yeah, I mean, it's there's a lot to wade through as I'm learning the process down in Madison. So
I can only imagine. 1-800-228-5615. We're going to take our second and final break this hour. We're considering women's roles in government. All four guests, Emily Berge, Aaron Forrest, Jody Emerson, and Robin Moore, are staying with us to as we wrap up the hour. But we'd love to take some calls. 1-800-228-5615. This is The West Side, and we'll be back in just a bit.
Support for WPR comes from Capital Lakes, a continuing care retirement community offering all levels of care. Located in Madison, close to Overture Center, Monona Terrace, and the UW campus. More is at retirement.org. Support also comes from the University of Wisconsin-Stout, offering online undergraduate and graduate degrees and professional education and certificate options for adult learners. uwstout.edu/WPR.
Welcome back to the West Side. I'm Rich Kramer. Thanks for joining us this Monday morning. Four guests are lending us their time today to talk about women's roles in government. They are Emily Berge, of the Eau Claire City Council, recently elected. Aaron Forrest is an executive director of Emerge Wisconsin. Jody Emerson, recently elected to the Wisconsin State Assembly. And Robin Moore, president of the Wisconsin Federation of Republican Women. You too can be part of the show. Give us a call at 1-800-228-5615 if you've got a question or a comment. 1-800-228-5615. So I want to talk about, you know, I'm really glad, first of all, that we've got a really nice panel here. We've got people from a group, you know, we've got the Republican and the more Democratic kind of perspectives here. Lord knows there's probably groups for libertarian women and everything else. So because we are limited in who we can have on, we do our best. But I think we've got a good group here. But the question that I wanted to bring up is that political party organization and women participation in politics. According to some research I've got here, of the 36 Democrats in the Wisconsin State Assembly, for example, 50% are women and 50% are men, just about. About 16% of Republicans in the Assembly are women. That's 10 out of 63. So certainly Republican women have made notable gains as well across the country. But I wanted to go to our different guests first on the phone, and I want to start with Aaron Forrest. What do you think, you know, might account for these different results when we add up the numbers?
So there are a few things that we know, and some of the literature on women in public office is interesting because there used to be a lot of things that we could say about women in elected office, and we could say, regardless of party, women do this, this, and this. And since the sort of most of the women in the Republican Party, not all, but most of them were on the more moderate end of the scale. And what we've seen over the past decade is, sort of a sharp turn to the right, which leaves out some of those women. And so that's part of what we're seeing. The other thing we're seeing is in the last 2 years, there's obviously just been tremendous motivation by Democratic women. And that sort of thing you're going to see, you know, as national power shifts, right, you're going to see motivation typically by the other side. Now, we're seeing that much more dramatically right now, because of the specific person in power and the things that he has said about women and the way that he has treated women, right? Like, that has been particularly motivating. The other thing that we see and that we know about women running for office is that when a woman runs for office, whether she wins or loses, and I think Emily touched on this earlier anecdotally, but we know this based on a bunch of studies, when women run, more women run the next time. And so as much as we want to, and by we I mean not me, give credit to Donald Trump for all of these women running, women are also running because of the example that Hillary Clinton set and that other women set. So I think that there are a lot of things that are happening there. And then I just want to touch on one thing that Jody said really quickly before we move on, and
sure,
that's this whole concept of identity politics. And the ringer that has been put through in the last couple of years is frustrating to me as someone who studies this and who really cares about parity as an issue of good government. And that's to say, of course, you should not elect anyone because they're a woman. But also, that doesn't happen. And men were elected because they were men for several centuries, so I'm not that interested in hearing about it also. But who we are as people, right? If we are being a woman impacts the way I walk through the world, so it impacts my perspective. Being a gay person impacts how someone is treated and how they walk through the world, so it impacts their perspective. Same thing for being a person of color and a woman of color and someone with disabilities, right? And so the best way to get good decisions made is to get as many perspectives as possible around decision-making tables. So when people are trashing identity politics, it's not about the identity. It's about those perspectives. And that's how you get good decisions. You get as you want to look at as many sides of every issue and every policy as you can, so you know how it's going to impact different people, and you pass better laws the first time. So that is my soapbox rant about people who are down on identity politics.
Well, thank you for that, Erin Forrest. Robin Moore, I want to bring you in now, and you know, with the Wisconsin Federation of Republican Women, you know, they're what do you say, and are you as a group working to try to bring the numbers, the 10 out of 63, more in line with what we're seeing, you know, in other parties like the Democratic Party?
Sure, absolutely, and that's being done, whether it's at a local level with our clubs or, you know, all the way up to our national level. There's several initiatives that have been rolled out over the last several years. I think the take that we take, and I'll disagree just a little bit with Erin.
Sure.
Just because our organization, we're not focused just on that. So I agree with a lot of what she said. But I think the difference when we look at it on the right side of the aisle, if you will, isn't the turn from moderate to conservative so much as it is what women are actually doing when they are engaging. We have seen a lot of our women be the ones that start new groups to focus on an issue. You know, I'm very proud to say that one of the reasons we have voter ID in Wisconsin is because a group of Waukesha women decided to start going to the Government Accountability Board meetings to make sure that what was happening there impacted in a positive way election integrity. And voter ID was just one of those things, and that was a very strong focus. So while none of those, I don't believe any of the women that were participating in the group at the time were running for office or elected officials, because organizations like the WFRW and our local clubs educate women on the issues, then they're able to take their voice and do something with it, take it to their town council, take it to the school board meetings, and make sure that their voice is heard. The other thing that we've seen is that while, you know, gender politics is something I do not agree with, even though I'm leading a women's organization, I think it goes back to, you know, what we were talking about, stereotypes in some of those comments. I'm glad there's differences between men and women, to be quite frank. And, you know, I hope there always will be, because I think we do a better job, as I said earlier, of finding solutions and, yes, negotiating. Now, we might have to take the criticism, especially from women, as it was said, but I think that is a strength of ours as opposed to something we need to curb, curtail, or, you know, try to put in more in line with men. Something we saw at one of our national conferences a few years ago was a very in-depth survey of the couple thousand women who attended. And the results were great. I mean, it was kind of, you know, it was a broad spectrum of questions. But the one that stood out for me was, if you were voting for somebody, you know, are you voting for them because they are this, that, or the other thing, a man, a woman? I don't remember what all the responses are. Or the very last one was, are you voting for them because they are the best person? And out of this group of women from across the country, the result was, you know, 99% voted because they're voting for the right person. So do we need more of a women's voice in government? Absolutely. But I think if we looked at it just purely from elected officials, the impact that women are having on politics and on issues are sometimes just standing right next to those people and having an impact as well. But we will always search out candidates, especially for those school board and city councils, because it makes it easy for the women who might be younger to stay close to home and families and then still contribute to their communities in that way.
Thank you for that, Robin Moore. We are getting close to the top of the hour, but And I've got so many questions that I wanted to throw in there. Very quickly, I'll do round robin. Do you think certainly it seems like some of the motivation on the Democratic side has been related to the president and some of the comments. But do you think the surge in women getting involved in politics, I'm not saying that it's the only cause, but do you think there is a Trump effect? Jody Emerson.
Talking to some of the women who were running for assembly in particular, I would say it was probably in the minority of why women wanted to run, okay. Really. But, you know, I think, like Emily said, if you don't have a seat at the table, you're on the menu. And I think we've seen women's issues that affect us repeatedly put to the back of the table. And I think we need to do what we can to make it more friendly for women to be in office. Certainly, we've seen that at our Eau Claire City Council recently. Can you be a mother of a young child and adequately serve or not?
Right. That was quite a discussion. Emily Berge? I won't be able to go around, there was a pointing in the studio. So, Emily Berge, anything to add to that as far as Trump effect?
I think there is an effect. I guess I can only speak for myself. For me, it more affected me that whole election, like I said before, as it really opened my eyes. I really started paying attention, which then led to me being more involved, which led to me meeting more people, which led me to being here in the studio talking about elected women. I guess that's my story.
All right. Thank you for that. And let's go to Aaron Forrest for the final word here. What's the future for your group and others and the effort to get more women in politics?
We made significant strides in 2018, but getting to parity in elected office was never going to be, there was never going to be a one-cycle solution.
Right.
And so we just hope that we continue to elect great women like Emily, like Jody, who care about lifting other women up with them, and that's the way we get this done faster.
All right.
Right, when we can start making it exponential.
With that, thank you so much. I want to thank all of our guests. Emily Berge is a Eau Claire City Councilwoman for District 1. Thank you. Aaron Forrest is the Executive Director of Emerge Wisconsin. Thank you very much. Jody Emerson represents the 91st Assembly District. Thank you. And Robin Moore is the President of Wisconsin Federation of Republican Women. Thank you. It was a great discussion. Thanks for listening to the show. Next week, we'll talk about the news year in review. It was a busy one at the state, local, and national level. So until then, have a safe and productive week. I'm Rich Kramer. We'll chat again next Monday morning.